We have caught up down in Nolens with Paul Azinger. Welcome to the show, Paul. Glad you're with us.
The elusive Paul Azinger? What you trying to say?
The elusive Paul Azinger. I've tried to get you on the show a few times before. I finally got you on. Thanks for being with us. How are things in New Orleans on the day after?
I'll tell you, it's pretty bad right now, man. It was crazy Sunday night and all day yesterday. I think if LSU would have won the game, it'd probably be pretty crazy today, but it is dead.
Yeah, I can totally understand. Now, you told me you're putting your wife on the plane to send her home, and you're going fishing for a few days. That sounds pretty good.
It's going to be great. You know, you can sight cast these giant redfish here in pretty shallow water, you know, probably, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 feet deep, and you can see them. And I just love it, but it's going to be really windy tomorrow. I don't know. I might get canceled tomorrow and only get to fish one day, but I am still going to stay no matter what. I love the city. It's, you know, I mean, they took it on the chin, but it's bouncing back, and there's the right places to be here and the wrong places to be, but the food's always good, and, man, you'd be awesome to hang out with it in this town, Johnny.
I've done that town well. My rookie year, I missed the cut there and didn't leave until Wednesday the next week.
I think that's actually legendary. I think I've heard that story.
it's 100% true. It was my first trip to New Orleans, and I stayed for 5 extra days. Made a lot of close friends. I have a lot of friends down there. I wish I could be there. I wish I could be there in March for the NCAA tournament too. But you know, some of us have to work for a living.
Yeah, I know. Well, not me right now. Thank goodness. This is Kelly Gibson's stomping grounds too. I bump into him a lot when I'm here. He may be listening right now to you, and he may figure out I'm here and give me a call. I may call him, actually. I like it here. So, anyway, what's going on, man?
Not a whole lot. Did you get to see any golf this weekend?
No, I never saw a shot, but, I follow it on Twitter, you know, and Steve Stricker played really, really well. And, congratulations to Steve. He's, you know, last year the only 4 tournaments that counted towards Ryder Cup points were the 4 majors. And this year, every tournament counts. If you make the cut, you're making Ryder Cup money, and the 4 majors are double, and Stricker's obviously off to a great start. So I'm happy for him. Is he the highest-ranked American in the world right now?
Yeah, he moves to 5th tomorrow or today. He'll move to 5th in the world. Which, how is it possible that a guy like Steve Stricker, and we see it on very rare occasions, I think we saw it with Vijay Singh, is actually a better player after the age of 40 than they were in their 20s and 30s?
Yeah, that's a mystery. I don't know. A part of it, I think, is the ability to maintain the passion, you know, and if you think about Stricker, he's had 2 careers. He and Verplank probably, maybe they're tied for comeback players of the century, if you think about it, you know, because especially for Plank, I mean, he wasn't just missing cuts. I mean, he was finishing dead last by like 5 shots, 10 shots in a lot of events. And, you know, a lot of guys that have that happen will never come back. Well, Verplank came all the way back. People do remember that the same thing kind of was happening to Stricker. And I believe that, you know, he doesn't take anything for granted because of what he went through, that trial. You know, sometimes those trials make you stronger. And I just think his passion for the game is just as strong now, maybe stronger than it's ever been. BJ practiced more in his 40s than anybody in their 20s. And, you know, there's no shortcut to success. I mean, you can't hope for it or wish for it. If you're not the most prepared, most committed guy, then you're not going to compete. And I think to take that into your 40s is rare.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you're 100% right in that to be able to do it. Now, I think there's guys right now in their 40s who are going to bear down this year because this is probably their last chance to play a Ryder Cup in the U.S., Stricker being one of them. You know Phil's going to make the team. But I think there's a lot of other guys who feel like this may be their last shot. How important to those guys is it that it's a Ryder Cup year?
I believe it matters. I think they're thinking about it. You know, the Ryder Cup is always a pinnacle experience for players. You know, it's an opportunity of a lifetime to represent your country again. And I'm assuming you're talking about somebody like Furyk, maybe. I'm trying to think who else you're thinking about.
I mean, even guys like a Jerry Kelly, who never made a Ryder Cup team, played a couple Presidents Cup teams. I mean, guys like that who, are bearing down this year because it's really their last shot.
Yeah, Jerry Kelly's never been shy about wanting to be on the team and be picked, and I really considered him, as a pick when I was the captain in 08, just because of his tenacity and his desire to be there. I mean, head-to-head, Jerry Kelly's a tough guy, but, it's just an honor, to be a part of a group of, you're talking about, 0.1% of all the golfers on the planet are ever able to play the PGA Tour. And that actually might even be high, the 0.1% of all the players on the planet. And then to make the 12 elite to get to play Ryder Cup is, even more unique and more special. And it's, it's something no one can ever take away. And it's an experience. What ends up happening, if it's a good experience, I mean, the guys that play on these teams almost can become family. It's a great atmosphere. The guys get along, and, they're going to have a tough road to hoe to beat Europe, though, I guarantee you.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. Now, I don't want this to be all about the Ryder Cup because I'd like to have you back on in August to talk about what's going to happen then. But I do want to ask you, are you surprised that the model that you created at Valhalla hasn't been taken and used forward? Why, Corey didn't use it. It doesn't sound like Davis is going to use it. And certainly Freddie in the President's Cup hasn't used it, although he's had tremendous success. Are you surprised that model hasn't been used by future captains?
Not really. I mean, Corey never showed any interest at all in what I did. But, my situation was unique in that we had only won 3 times in 25 years and lost 5 of the last 6, And the only real win was the miracle comeback in Brookline in 99, or we lost 6 straight Ryder Cups. So for me to take this kind of outside-the-box approach, team building was something that was embraced. And I think that the timing was right for that approach because it got guys that are used to getting their butts kicked, like, Mickelson and Furyk and Sink, who had nothing really but bad experiences at Ryder Cup. It really it got them engaged and something to look forward to because it was so unique and so different. But, I think the captain's main responsibility is to create what he feels is the best environment for success. And Fred Couples, obviously, just being himself, creates a terrific environment. Corey would have to work at it a little more because, he's just not, he's not one of the guys. And
right.
It's just different. Davis is a little more kind of one of the guys, and I think he'll create a terrific atmosphere. He doesn't necessarily have to take the same approach to team building that I did, but I just looked at the way Europe did things, and they are bonded by small groups already. I mean, the Irish and the Spaniards and the Italians and the English, I mean, they all play together, and if they don't play together, they're paired with best friends, like an Irish Darren Clark and Lee Westwood from England. And they're formidable. And I just felt like, I took this kind of Navy SEALs thinking of small groups bond better and got these guys to sell out for each other. And the best thing about it was it got guys who were used to losing Ryder Cups really intrigued and engaged. And it just worked. I mean, they played great. We were heavy underdogs going in without Tiger. And, in the end, it was all about them and creating what I thought would be the best environment for them. I don't think that it's necessarily what Davis needs to do or has to do. So I'm not surprised, but I'm confident Davis will create a terrific environment.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that people who don't know Davis would be surprised that you categorized him as one of the guys, but I completely agree with you. I want to move beyond the Ryder Cup for a moment, and of course our guest is the last captain, American captain to win one, and of course it's Paul Azinger. I want to talk about the Sony Open this week, but I also want to talk about the 2000 Sony Open and what you remember from that week after all you'd been through to go out there, and I was there. I mean, you just dusted the field off. We never had a chance.
Well, it was just one of those things, I was 99 was a really tough year, and lost some dear friends. And when the airplane, the pain was on, went down, and my agent was on it, and my day-to-day manager was on the plane too. So it was a devastating thing I had ever felt, pain-wise. And then, doing the funeral and all that, and you know, I just worked really hard in that off season. I felt like I was playing with more of a purpose, you know, and I believe that's important. And when I got to Hawaii, you know, I've had so many chances to win there prior to 2002, John. I mean, I don't know. I had something like 7 top fours there or something before that year that I won it. And I don't know. It was kind of like, you know, somebody did a kind of a caricature, a little drawing of, you know, some guy in knickers kicking the ball in the hole with me standing over the putter as I'm watching it bounce in. So it was real. It was just real special. And I think it provided a little bit of healing for everybody involved in that tragedy. You know, all still very close. And but, you know, it's just one of those, like, I love the course, and it was just kind of like it was meant to be.
Yeah, it really was. And the course hasn't changed. I mean, obviously they've changed par on a couple of holes, but all they did was change the signs and the scorecard. The golf course remains relatively unchanged. How is it that it stands the test of time every year?
I just don't think they care what the players shoot. You know, if I've always argued with them a little bit, because they've always wanted to get the rough up really high there and make the course more difficult. And I said, it's hard enough to get guys to, you know, leave the house in January, but to have them come over here and get punished in tall rough, you know, this is just not going to be a great experience for them. As nice as Hawaii is, nobody likes shooting 80, you know. I just try to keep the course, you know, fun and playable, and that nice little flyer rough. And, you know, one year it'll be 11 under, the next year it'll be 19 under. It's like Hilton Head. You know, the course is 6,800 yards long, and it still stands the test of time. Single digits under par wins there often. I don't know. I like it personally because they've never tried to target a score. You know, I think the superintendents, a lot of times they say, man, you know, I can't wait for these guys to come into town. We're going to kick their butts. You know, all you got to do is grow the rough up, and that generally is a formula for disaster for the players. And I don't know. I don't think anybody wants to see that in January.
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, it's fun to go over there, and if you can get going and make some birdies, then terrific. Otherwise, it's a good opportunity to at least get warm for those of us who never moved to Florida and who tend to be cold all winter long. Paul, well, we noticed that you teed it up a few times on the Champions Tour, but you never really – you didn't play at all this year. Do you have any plans to, or is it just not something that that you have any desire to do?
Well, I got hurt. You know, I played 4 times, I guess, in 2010 when I turned 50, and I didn't love it. You know, I didn't play horrible or anything, but I didn't play great. But when I wrecked on my bike and I – separated my shoulder and broke some ribs and broke my foot. I mean, I didn't really tell anybody that, so I'm sure you might even be hearing this for the first time.
I am. I'm hearing it for the first time.
Yeah, I wrecked pretty bad. I just some lady pulled out in front of me, and I went down in a heap. And I don't know. I guess I'm getting to where I'm pretty almost fully recovered. My left ankle, I still can't roll on it real well. And, you know, going back to just the work ethic, I mean, if you can't, those guys are all in the Hall of Fame playing that tour, and if they're not, they're getting ready to go in. And I look at it like, man, if that guy is working harder than me, he's going to beat me, and I don't know that I want to work that hard right now. I'm kind of enjoying this extra 15 pounds.
Which probably went to 18 this week in New Orleans.
Yeah, no doubt. But, you know, those guys, look at the scores. You know, these 3-round tournaments, and the scores are really low, and I was surprised, you know, when I went out there. I remember playing a practice round in a cart. I played 9 holes, and I drove past the putting green, and Langer was hitting putts. And after I got done with 9 holes, I went back around the putting green, and he's still there. I looked at my caddy. I said, how am I going to beat that? He looked right at me and said, you're not. I said, I know.
I actually got to broadcast my first Champions Tour event last year in Houston at one of my favorite spots at the Woodlands. And as I was leaving the golf course in the rain on Wednesday, Tom Kite was at the back of the range hitting balls. And the next day, the tournament ended up getting rained out. The weather was never good. He was, every time I drove past the range, he was hitting golf balls. And I thought, holy moly, hasn't he accomplished enough? You know, but he still loves being out there.
All I'm thinking is get a hobby, man. Just, you need a hobby.
You have a handful, not only fishing. What else is on your list?
Well, I still ride every day. I've ridden at least 70,000 miles. You know what I'm really trying to put together? I mean, it's like the germ of an idea right now is I want to do a Wounded Warriors ride, and I'm in the process of trying to get the wheels in motion to try to bring awareness, you know. And, I don't want to say too much, but right now riding that bike is my passion. Even after I, you know, went down in a heap, I still love it. There's a saying that four wheels moves the body and two wheels moves the soul, and that's the way I feel. And so I like doing that. I like drinking coffee. I live to eat. I don't eat to live. And so I'm just enjoying my life. I mean, I could not be in a happier place. You know, plus I like that stupid Twitter, and I get myself in a little bit of trouble on there sometimes, and I argue and fight with people, and I try to stir the pot. You've seen me. I mean, like last night during that game, buddy, yes. I'm going to tell you what. My sole purpose was to irritate Alabama fans. And, oh, my God, I lost like 35 followers over that Twitter.
Well, awesome. And the thing is you don't confine yourself just to sports. I mean, you must be one of the fastest guys with a remote that I've ever seen, because you'll be commenting on a football game, a Republican debate, and the debut of some other show all at the same time. And I'm thinking, how many TVs does he have in his room?
Yeah, I don't even want to tell you. But, no, I do like – I mean, I like watching that Moonshiners. I met this Moonshiner Jim Tom, you can find him on the internet on YouTube, and I like watching that show. And you know, I'm kind of into politics. I mean, I think it's a critical time in this country. I really believe that this summer, I think we're in for a culture war, and I just, you know, I really want to be on top of it. You know, there's, you know, sometimes you just got to do what you feel is the right thing, even if you know you don't like the consequences. And if, you know, I'm not going to do anything, you know, blatantly stupid to cost myself TV time or anything, but at the same time, you know, I do believe that America's at a crossroads, and I just think I want to be participating in that in some capacity. So I don't think there's anything wrong with it. So I try to diversify my tweets. When people say to me, you know, stick to golf, that's the only thing that really does irritate me. If you want to get right, stick to golf, because I'm like, okay, wait a minute. I read more about global warming than you do. I know I read more about politics than you do. I probably know the backup center on the freaking Colts name, you know, so I don't know.
I completely agree with you. Well, you do have a lot of time, but you're using it wisely. Now, you're still a part of the ESPN ABC family, I'm assuming. And
I am. I'm real excited about that, because it looks like, you know, I'm pretty sure next year I'm going to be doing the Masters in this order: the Masters, the U.S. Open, the British Open, and the Ryder Cup. So those are going to be the four events you see me next year, and the four events only, unless CBS wants to bring me in, you know, which I would love to do in some capacity, the PGA Championship. But, you know, 4 or 5 weeks a year is perfect for me right now. I don't want to do 15 or 20. You know, I love the broadcast booth. I love being the analyst, and I feel like I want to let the picture be descriptive, and I want to be informative. And, you know, I'd rather have the viewer want me to say more than shut the hell up, you know. So that's kind of my philosophy, and I just really like it.
Yeah, and you're good at it, and we want you to be there more often. I think that you know, because of the nature of the contracts now, we see the same people so often that it would be nice to get a bit more diversity, I think, on the telecast. What do you think of that?
Totally agree. I think the commissioners, you know, kind of painted the viewer into a corner, really. You only have the two major networks, you know, CBS and NBC, and then you have the Golf Channel, which is generally, except for a few events, going to only cover Thursday, Friday. So, you know, the viewer doesn't get that third network. You know, ABC is not in the mix anymore. They were kind of priced out. And, you know, so that was just all about money.
Right.
And I think the viewers probably, you know, we're pretty deep into the new contracts and all that. And I just think it's just one of those things where I think the viewers saying, hey, you know what? I mean, eventually, if you just hear the two networks, you know, you kind of are looking for the third. And I'm not discounting the Golf Channel.
No,
but maybe I should say the fourth network.
Well, you know, it's funny you bring up the Golf Channel, because about 16 months ago, when it was announced that they were going to start this morning drive show, your name as one of the guys in the seats. I don't know if it ever if it was a rumor that it even got to you, but it was Paul Azinger would be perfect for that show. Did that ever even become a conversation?
Not to my knowledge. I would have loved to have entertained that possibility. I do enjoy watching the morning drive. It drives me crazy sometimes. I want to throw stuff at Cassilius and Gary Williams and stuff. But I love them both. You know, they're great dudes. And no, but it was never presented to me in any capacity whatsoever. I wouldn't mind coming in and filling in once in a while, or just do something just for fun. Conceptually, I think it's a pretty decent concept, and it's kind of like Mike and Mike in the morning, but it's about golf.
Right, and I think I agree with you. I think they do a great job, and sometimes
they do.
You know, and I love it when Annika's on there, because like when you speak, when somebody who's been to the mountaintop talks about competition, I want to hear what they have to say. And
especially Annika.
Right.
Good grief. No, you're right though, and I agree with you. I think when you hear it's interesting, because you know you have, you know, athletes turned analysts, and then you have, you know, journalists, you know, like Jack Whitaker types and Jim McKay types, who are phenomenal as well. But I want to hear an athlete that can articulate what he was feeling and thinking and what's going on. I think that's the key. But that show, that morning drive is a good show. And those guys, it's not an easy show. And they do a good job. They make it look easy.
Yeah. So what's next for you? You're going to catch some fish. You're going to slay some redfish this week. We call them drum up here, by the way.
Yeah.
And then what's next for you?
I am not sure. I really want to put together this ride. I really think it can make a difference in the lives of these guys that aren't getting the parade when they come home, you know, and then the guys that are hurt. I mean, they sacrifice. You might not agree with going over to Iraq. I hated the idea that America was going to go over there right from the get-go. But these guys are, you know, a lot of them are coming back hurt, and I just think we should all be aware of that and do everything we can at this point, now that it's all over. It looks like it's over, hopefully.
Right.
To reach out and to make a difference, you know, individually for somebody you know or as a group. But I'm trying to decide. I don't know how much of what's raised and given to Wounded Warriors goes to the warriors themselves. So I'm still looking into that aspect of it, but that's my hope. So now I'm going to really just try to get that done.
Well, I have, and I'll talk to you about it off the air. I participated in an event down at Fort Bragg on September 11th, and the people that are involved in that are dollar for dollar to the Wounded Warriors. And they're a great group of people. And obviously, you know, you can call Faraday and get a lot of information from him as well. But I would like to introduce you to these guys, and I'll do that off the air at some point, because they're as committed. They're the type of people that you want to be involved with.
Well, I'd appreciate that. Just text message me some info, or just give me a call later, and we'll talk about that for sure. You know, there was a time when I was kind of, you know, enjoying, you know, running off to where these natural disasters were and helping people clean up and stuff too. And, you know, there's just so many people that hurt in this country and that are in need. I don't want to go overseas and help people. I want to just stay and do it right here if I'm going to do it. And I've got time to do it. And, you know, I'm just in a beautiful place in my life where I can, you know, kill my day. And I want to have a purpose. You know, when you got to have a purpose. Like Stricker still has a purpose, you know, as a player, and I want to have a purpose as a person. And right now I think it's going to be, you know, charitable.
You're the father of daughters. How could you possibly say that you're in a beautiful place? That's got to be as nerve wracking as anything you've ever done in your life.
I'm biting my tongue right now. You just said that.
I understand.
I mean, my daughter's boyfriend doesn't play golf or know anything about it. There's no way he's listening to this, but I'm still going to bite my tongue.
Fair enough. Paul, it's great to catch up with you. I appreciate you coming on the show. Enjoy the rest of your time. Go slay some redfish.
Hey, thanks, John. And anytime you want me to come back, I'll be happy to. You do a heck of a job. Love following you on Twitter. And I just appreciate the time, man.
Well, I appreciate the time. I mean, we haven't talked about poker. I mean, there's a lot of things we can get to.
I smacked the locals here yesterday for $300.
Attaboy, did you get recognized?
Did I what?
Did you get recognized at the table?
Oh, yeah. Two guys recognized me right away. I strong-armed them. One guy called me down. He said, I just got to call you down just to make, because it would be a good story. Man, you know how many pots I've lost because somebody wanted to make a good story? Don't do that again. I won't check raise you the rest of the. So anyway, it's just fun.
All right, Paul. Thank you very much.
All right, buddy. See ya.
We'll see you. That's Paul Azinger. They only made one.